Chapter 5. The following day I wrote to my mother, "For God's sake, come for me. I can stay here no longer. If you knew what my eyes have seen and my ears have heard, you would not delay. Indeed, had it not been for crossing the St. Lawrence, I would have started for Murray Bay the day after the secret meeting. I remembered the happy and peaceful days spent with my mother in reading the beautiful chapters of the Bible, so well chosen by her to instruct and interest me. What a difference there was between our conversations after these readings and the conversation I heard at St. Thomas. Happily, my parents' desire to see me again was as great as mine. In a few weeks, my mother came for me. She pressed me to her heart and brought me back to the arms of my father. I arrived home July 17, 1821, and spent the afternoon and evening by my father's side. With pleasure he examined me in grammar, algebra, and even in geometry. More than once I noticed tears of joy in his eyes when he saw that my answers were correct. What an admirable teacher this Mr. Jones must be, he would say, to have advanced a child so much in the short space of 14 months. How sweet but short were those hours! We had family worship. I read from Luke the return of the prodigal son. My mother then sang a hymn of joy and gratitude, and I went to bed with my heart full of happiness to take the sweetest sleep of my life. But, O God, what an awful awakening Thou hadst prepared for me! About 4 o'clock in the morning, my mother's heart-rending screams fell upon my ear. "What is the matter, dear mother?" "Oh, my dear child, you have no more a father. He is dead." In saying these words, she lost consciousness and fell on the floor. While a friend who had passed the night with us gave her proper care, I hastened to my father's bed. I pressed him to my heart, I kissed him, I covered him with my tears, I moved his head, I pressed his hands, I tried to lift him up on his pillow. I could not believe that he was dead. It seemed to me that even if dead, he would come back to life, that God could not thus take my father away from me at the very moment when I had come back to him after so long an absence. I knelt to pray, but my tears and cries were useless. He was dead. He was already cold as ice. 2 days later, he was buried. My mother was so overwhelmed with grief that she could not follow the funeral procession. I remained with her as her only earthly support. Poor mother! How many tears she shed in those days of supreme grief! Though I was young, I could understand the greatness of our loss, and I mingled my tears with hers. How painful the sleepless nights of a woman when God takes suddenly her husband away in the prime of his life and leaves her alone, plunged in misery with 3 small children, 2 even too young to know their loss. Every object in the house and every step she takes reminds her of her loss. How bitter are the tears when her youngest child throws himself into her arms and says, "Mama, where is Papa? Why does he not come back? I am lonely." I heard her sobs during the long hours of the days and nights. Many times on her knees she implored God to be merciful to her and her 3 unhappy orphans. I could do nothing then to comfort her, but love her, pray, and weep with her. Only a few days after the burial, I saw Mr. Courtois coming to our house. He was the parish priest who had tried to take away our Bible. He was reputed to be rich, so my first thought was that he had come to comfort and help us. I could see that my mother had the same hopes. She welcomed him as an angel from heaven. From his very first words, however, I could see we were wrong. He tried to be sympathetic and spoke of the confidence we should have in God in times of trial, but his words were cold and dry. Turning to me, he said, "Do you continue to read the Bible, my little boy?" "Yes, sir," I answered, my voice trembling with fear that he would try again to take away that treasure now that I had no longer a father to defend it. Then he said, "Madam, I told you that it was not right for you or your child to read that book." My mother cast down her eyes and answered only by the tears which ran down her cheeks. After a long silence, the priest continued, "Madam, there is something due for the prayers which have been sung and the services which you requested to be offered for the repose of your husband's soul. I will be very much obliged to you if you pay me that little debt." "Mr. Courtois," answered my mother, "my husband left me nothing but debts. I have only my own hands to procure a living. For these orphans' sake, if not for mine, do not take the little that is left." "But, madam, your husband died suddenly without any preparation. He is therefore in the flames of purgatory. To deliver him, you must unite your personal sacrifices to the prayers and masses of the church." As I said, my husband has left me absolutely without means, and it is impossible for me to give you any money, replied my mother. "But, madam, the masses offered for the rest of your husband's soul must be paid for," answered the priest. My mother covered her face with her handkerchief and wept. My feelings were not those of grief, but of anger and unspeakable horror. My eyes were fixed on the face of that man who tortured my mother's heart. My hands were clenched as if ready to strike. I felt inclined to say to him, "Are you not ashamed, you who are so rich, to come and take away the last piece of bread from our mouths?" But my physical and moral strength were not sufficient, and I was filled with regret and disappointment. After a long silence, my mother raised her eyes, reddened with tears, and said, "Sir, you see that cow in the meadow? Her milk and butter form the principal part of my children's food. I hope you will not take her away from us. If, however, such a sacrifice must be made to deliver my poor husband's soul from purgatory, take her as payment of the masses to be offered to extinguish those devouring flames." The priest instantly rose, saying, "Very well, madam," and went out. Our eyes anxiously followed him as he directed his steps towards the meadow and drove the cow in the direction of his home. I screamed with despair, "Oh, mother, he is taking our cow. What will become of us?" My mother also cried out with grief as she saw the priest taking away the only means which heaven had left her to feed her children. Throwing myself into her arms, I asked her, "Why have you given away our cow? What will become of us? We shall surely die of hunger." "Dear child," she answered, "I did not think the priest would be so cruel as to take away the last resource which God had left us. Ah, if I had believed him to be so unmerciful, I would never have spoken to him as I did. As you say, my dear child, what will become of us? But have you not often read to me in your Bible that God is the Father of the widow and the orphans? He will listen to our prayers and see our tears. Let us kneel and ask him to be merciful to us. We both knelt down. She took my right hand in her left, and lifting the other hand towards heaven, she offered a prayer for her poor children, since as I have never since heard. When her words were choked by sobs, she would speak with her burning eyes raised to heaven and with her hand uplifted. I also prayed to God with her and repeated her words, which were broken by my sobs. When her prayer was ended, she remained for a long time pale and trembling. Then drawing me to her bosom, she said, "Dear child, if ever you become a priest, I ask of you never to be so hard-hearted towards poor widows as are the priests of today." When she said these words, I felt her burning tears falling on my cheek. The memory of those tears has never left me. I felt them constantly during the 25 years I spent in the preaching the inconceivable superstitions of Rome. I was not better than many of the other priests. I believed the impious fables of purgatory. I accepted the money which the rich gave me for the masses, I said, to extinguish the flames. But the remembrance of my mother's words and tears kept me from being so cruel and unmerciful towards the poor widows. The Lord, I believed, had put into my mother's mouth those words, so simple but so full of eloquence and beauty, as one of his great mercies towards me. Those tears the hand of Rome has never been able to wipe off. How long, O Lord, shall that insolent enemy of the gospel, the Church of Rome, fatten herself upon the tears of the widow and the orphan with that cruel pagan invention, purgatory? Oh, remove the veil from the eyes of the priests and the people of Rome, as thou hast removed it from mine. Make them to understand that their hopes of purification must not rest on these fires, but only on the blood of the Lamb shed on Calvary to save the world.